messenger. Ah, yes, the third messenger. Going to get to the third messenger and the third messenger's wonderful message soon here. But, you know, it occurred to me that John didn't volunteer to write this book. John was drafted. Remember, at the beginning, we read how he came to be on the island of Patmos for the testimony of the Lord, because of the testimony of the Lord. And the common thinking there is that he was exiled. He was taken there apart from his will, and because he had nothing else to do, he just woke up one night, ate a bad pizza, was shown the future. But he came here, sent here by God, I believe, for the very purpose of writing this. He wasn't under duress, I don't think. He came here to do it. He needed to go to a quiet, out-of-the-way place, and that place was Patmos, which is an island off the coast of Greece. You can go there today. The island still exists. And again, he was sent there so that he could see this. But it was still a draft job. It was still something like, all right, you're gonna see this. And it distressed him greatly. It distresses us in many places in this account, because it's not our evangel. But we're living in times that are being described here by John. And I think that's pretty cool. What other generation can say that? And of course, the argument comes, yes, Martin, every generation has thought that it's the last generation. Well, one of those generations has to be right. And I say it's this one. If you look through world history, beginning with the creation of Adam, we have never seen an acceleration of complexity, of trouble, of war, of rumors of wars, of destruction capacity, of information, of people running to and fro. Never, never, never has there been a concentrated era like the one we're in. As I've often told you, and I'm going to demonstrate this with a chart from a book. If you want to get a head start on me here, there's a book called Margin. Can't remember the author. But it's about how our lives have, they lack margin. We have no comfort zone. We're always right up against it. And we have no breathing room. Another word for margin is breathing room. And when you think that you're about to go nuts and you think, what's wrong with me? If you pause to consider the fact, for instance, that humanity has ridden horses up until, say, the year 1860 or 70 or 80, whenever the Germans invented that horseless carriage. You're looking at, you know, 5,800 years or whatever. And now I want you to look at the last 100 years or 100 and something odd years, how things have exponentially increased in many different areas. And that's what this book, Margin, points out. They have charts in there showing just, in fact, from the year 1959, 1960, not merely going back to 1850 or 1860, but things were pretty stable even from that period of time, 1860, let's say, to 1960. That 100-year period did not show as many radical changes as this past 50 years. So it has been an unprecedented increase of many things. And I know I'm being very broad now because that's not my topic today. I'm going to have that chart on you. I took pictures of it in the book, and I'm going to show it to you from my phone. And you're going to be amazed. I talked yesterday about how happy people are going to be to see Babylon destroyed. And I absolutely believe that's true. And not because you have to hate people to do that, but because the system is so evil. I'll speak for myself concerning Christianity. People have gotten after me over the years, you're awful hard on Christianity, Martin. Well, Christianity has destroyed the peace of millions and millions and millions of people. It's incalculable the damage that the doctrine of eternal torment has done to the psyche of society. Impossible to calculate it. The hopelessness, the suicides, the stress, the people running away from who they think is God and getting into God knows what as a knee-jerk reaction to this insane God. So I'm going to be very happy, and let this apply to you. Later in this book of the unveiling, we're going to be looking at the destruction of religions. We're in Babylon is just not a religion, it's a city, but it represents a system. And Christianity is going down with it. As I've told you many times, all the religions and the politics of the earth must be destroyed in a flash. It's not going to happen gradually. It's going to happen in a flash. And, you know, who would volunteer to write about that? Yeah, maybe I would. Sounds like fun. All right, now we're going to move on to verse 9. The third messenger, ladies and gentlemen, the third messenger, the poor, pathetic, unhappy third messenger who is given not a great piece of information to give here. But these messengers, again, they are also drafted. The messenger that flies in heaven with the Aeonian evangel, I'm sure it would much rather have received Paul's evangel. Can I give a good message? No, you are the caretaker of the Aeonian evangel. Fear God or else. Oh, speaking of fear God or else, I covered that yesterday. Yeah, that's the Christian message. Okay, now, verse 9. I got another bone to pick with the world's most popular religion here soon. And another, a third messenger follows them, saying with a loud voice. And what follows here is the worst threat of doom thus far. That might be, I think it will be the title of this show. The worst threat of doom thus far. It's not very eloquent. If I had had more time, I could have come up with something better. I was unwilling to take the time. The title is just as messy as the event, as the threat. And here it is. The third messenger follows him, saying with a loud voice, if anyone is worshiping the wild beast and its image and is getting the emblem on his forehead or on his hand, he also is drinking of the wine of God's fury, which has been blended undiluted in the cup of his indignation. Now let's stop here. Very picturesque, image-inspiring words. Or should I say words inspired by images. Putting images in our head of wine. Wine is famous for making people A, happy, and then B, drunk. And so the inhabitants of Babylon have made the world drunk through their devious arts. And I'm going to tell you exactly what those devious arts are, but not today. When we get to Babylon proper in chapter 18, I will do that. But they now are going to be, quote, treated to the same treatment. Just like Haman was hung on the gallows he prepared for Mordecai in the book of Esther. Haman, the diabolical schemer against God's people, wanted to kill Mordecai, that good man, the good Jew, and he ended up being hanged on the gallows constructed of his own hand. So Babylon will drink of the same wine, the same intoxicant. Babylon will receive the doom that she planned to give to others. But at this time, anyone worshiping the wild beast and its image and is getting the emblem on his forehead or on his hand, he also is drinking of the wine of God's fury, which has been blended undiluted in the cup of his indignation. And he will be tormented, here it is, tormented in fire and sulfur before the holy messengers and before the lampkin. Verse 11, and the fumes of their torment are ascending for the eons of the eons, and they are having no rest day and night, those worshiping the wild beast and its image. And if anyone is getting the emblem of its name, and we know what the emblem is, remember? The emblem of its name. It's a mark. It's a carve effect. Anyone getting the emblem of the name of the beast, doesn't have to be the name itself, but the emblem of the name, they are among those who are going to receive the fury of God's indignation. Here is the endurance of the saints, verse 12. This tells me that those who are being tormented are mainly Israelites. Going to give you more on that here shortly. Here is the endurance of the saints, who are keeping the precepts of God and the faith of Jesus. Now, this other voice that comes out of heaven in verse 13, this is a better message. And I hear a voice out of heaven saying, it doesn't say whether there's a messenger saying this or not, right? Happy are the dead who are dying in the Lord henceforth. Yea, the Spirit is saying that they will be resting from their toil, for their acts are accompanying them. So here's what Christianity does with this. They take this passage and they just destroy it. This is a verse for a brief period of time at the end of this eon, describing it, describing the torment of those worshiping the wild beast. And the fall of Babylon, as epic as it is a brief thing. It might not be as brief as the destruction of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but it is a detonation of God. So there are limitations here. One of the limitations is time. Of course, the King James doesn't say this. The fumes of their torment are ascending forever and ever. And there's something that's read into here that it plainly doesn't say. The fumes of their torment are ascending. I need to spend a lot of time on that, so I'm not going to do it today. I'm probably going to do it tomorrow. But there are some of God's people in the doomed city of Babylon, and those are told in the unveiling chapter 18, come out of her, my people, lest you should be participating in her sins, and lest you should be getting her calamities. So it's the same with Lot. Lot was hanging around Sodom and Gomorrah. Not a great place to be. So God called Lot out of Sodom and Gomorrah. The same thing is happening here. Babylon is going to have lots of delights. It's going to be a wonderful city if you don't know what's going on underneath the surface. And so there are going to be some saints who are told, come out wherever you are. Get out of Babylon. So this in this section, which presages the detailed description of Babylon's destruction, these saints are told to get out. No, they're told to get out in chapter 18. This section is warning of the fall of Babylon. Babylon is falling. So this announcement is for those Israelites, those faithful ones who are in the city. So this whole section applies, I believe, to Israelites. It's not that other people around the world have not received the mark of the beast, because many have, most have. 99.99% are going to think this is the greatest thing going. But this message is specifically for those in the city that is going to be doomed in and wasted. So what do Christians do? They take this and they make it apply to everyone, to every inhabitant of the earth that ever lived, not just to everyone on the earth at this time, anyone who ever lived, and they make this torment eternal, and they miss an important part of it. These people aren't tormented for eternity. It's the fumes of their torment that testify for the eons of the eons, not eternity, that God doesn't mess around. And this is going to be a monument, if you will, a monument of rising smoke to God's disciplinary measures that ended the wicked eons once and for all and brought in the two good eons, namely the millennial kingdom and the new heavens and the new earth. So this is not intended, this judgment, for humanity as a whole. Certainly not for all humanity of all time. And when we look at the details, which I'm going to do at the end of this week, what's today, Thursday? Okay, tomorrow I'm going to open up more details to you. And then next week, we're still going to be working through this book, this chapter of this book, chapter 14, which admittedly is a difficult chapter. And this is one of the most dire threats in the book of the unveiling, probably until chapter 20, when the beast, the adversary, and false prophet are tormented in the lake of fire for the eons of the eons. But that's not really a threat, is it? That's not a threat. It's a promise. This, however, in 14, is a threat. Anyone who's worshiping the wild beast and its image, getting the emblem on the forehead or hand, drinking of God's fury. So, very specific, very logical, actually, as we're going to find out. Very sensible, believe it or not. Because God is always logical and sensible. And he doesn't do crazy things. He doesn't do insane things. They may look crazy and insane to us, but he has a larger plan. And he has the well-being of even those who are tormented. He has their well-being in mind. Because he is a God who, even in his wrath, always remembers mercy.